Hello and welcome to the Scottish Housing News Podcast. I'm Kieran Finlay and with me as always is Jimmy Black, and today we're going to be talking about technology within the home and specifically how it relates to the care sector. As housing and care providers continue to grapple with Scotland's ageing population, some are embracing tech more than ever before.
Earlier this year, Beald Housing and Care officially launched a digital hub in Linlithgow. Securing £75,000 in funding from the TAPI project, it set about showcasing a variety of preventative care technologies that aim to support individuals to live independently in their own homes for longer. Beald also hopes the hub will act as a blueprint and trial centre for housing of the future, with the new care technologies available for tenants, staff and other stakeholders to trial.
To discuss the hub and the future of tech and care are Dr. Lynn Douglas, the Chief Executive at Beald, and Gary Bailey, a BR24 Service Manager who is the Programme Lead for Beald's TAPI project. Lynn, welcome. It wasn't that long ago that Beald unveiled a new five-year corporate strategy that signalled a period of significant change and innovation. Why was it important to put tech-driven solutions at the forefront?
Well, as one of our major providers, specialist provider for older people and providing housing and care in Scotland, we've been operating now for over 50 years. And we are very interested in our new strategy on how the role of housing particularly can play a significant part in systems change and helping to improve the health of our population and ensuring that older people can live independently in their own homes. So we did set about with a very ambitious and bold strategy to really hook into the current policy context and actually consider how people could and should be able to age in place at home and at the centre of an integrated network within the community. And we see technology as having a significant role to play in that. And we've given ourselves quite an ambitious 10-year vision, which is that within Beald, we will lead, set and deliver the global standard for ageing at home. So technology really is a very important aspect of that. And we couldn't really achieve that vision or that mission without incorporating the technology into our design brief for future homes, or also talking to our tenants about how technology can help them live independently within their own homes.
Who sets this standard for ageing at home?
Wrapped into many government policies, there are aspirational targets. There are things in the Housing 2040 strategic document around the 20-minute community and how it's really important that we consider ensuring that older people or anybody who has an enduring need or a care need can live for as long as possible and as independent as they wish in their own homes. And there's been a real shift over the last decade away from institutionalized care with people going into care homes for a very long period of time into now where it's only the oldest and most frailest and those that need the most care actually make that shift into care homes, which is entirely appropriate. So there's really, I think, also the demands and the aspirations of people as they age in Scotland. I think the population is helping to set that standard because most people want to live in their homes and they want to be surrounded in their own communities and doing the things that they want to do to live a longer, healthier life and improve their quality of life, which is also a national target around ensuring that the older population live for longer, but they live well for longer whilst they're in their own home environment. So there's really multiple agencies involved in setting those standards and those targets. But we strongly believe as a housing association that specialises in housing for older people, that we should be at the forefront of helping to really push the boundaries on what is possible. And our technology work streams are really at the heart of that.
Lynn, there's a thing called TAPI, and there's a report entitled TAPI. It's a confusing acronym. Can you tell us what it means and what the TAPI thing is all about?
Yes. So TAPI 1 was published back in 2015-16, and TAPI stands for the Technology for an Aging Population Panel for Innovation. And it was set up to look at how technology can help improve outcomes for older people and how technology in itself can be an enabler in communities and in populations. So there was a TAPI to launch, which is now about 18 months ago, where people were, housing associations, local authorities that were providing technology-enabled care, were, you know, there was a call went out to find demonstrator sites to see whether we could put forward a challenge of for our own tenants and find out if we could demonstrate some of the TAPI principles by undertaking several programmes of work and be funded for that through the Dunhill Medical Trust, which is the funding body for TAPI 2. So being at the forefront of quite a few things in Scotland recently, we've done quite a lot of work with Tech Scotland looking at proactive telecare and learning quite a lot about our tenants and the digital era, how they're getting on with that, what their challenges are. We opted to put in a bid to be a demonstrator site in the TAPI 2 programme of work. And we were absolutely delighted to find that we were chosen to be the Scottish demonstrator site. So TAPI has six demonstrator sites. There's one in Scotland, which is ourselves. There's four in England and there's one in Wales. And they come together as a collaborative community where we're sharing learning and we're listening to how other associations and local authorities are actually achieving their goals for the TAPI programme of work.
If I were to come to the demonstration site in Linlithgow, what would you show me?
Well, it's really about the people. So that's the first thing I'd like to say. So what we're doing in our TAPI demonstrator site is that firstly, we're looking at digital literacy in older people and in our workforce, because as with many care workforces, our workforce is predominantly over the age of 45 and are perhaps not as familiar with digital technology as the younger generation are. So we're looking at digital literacy for our tenants and also for our workforce. We're also looking to see how technology can support our tenants to live independently by talking to tenants and their families using the TAPI principles to see whether once they share with us what it is that they're looking for, we can talk to them about potentially what kind of technology is available to help them live independently. And the third thing that we're doing with the technology is in the cohort of people that we have within our tenancies, we have a number of people that receive our Beeld Care at Home service. So they're already people that need care to live independently in their own homes. And we're using technology for those individuals to see whether the technology can alert us to people maybe going off their legs a little bit or start to behave out with their normal patterns of behaviour. So that's very much in the test period that we're looking for within the TAPI project. Now, Beeld decided when we got the funding from Dunhill Medical to do this project, we decided to match fund that and create our own TAPI digital hub. So what you would find is a mock-up of a one-bedroom flat with a kitchen, a lounge, bathroom and bedroom. And we've kitted that out full of the technology that we are talking to our tenants about using in the future. And one of the things I should just point out and say, which I think is very, very important, is one of the prerequisites of doing a TAPI demonstrator site was that we engaged with a third sector organisation called Co-Production Works, who've been brought on board to work with us as an organisation and with our tenants, so that we do this piece of work and we co-produce it with our tenants. So in terms of the technology that we have in our demonstrator site, our co-production leads, who are two of our tenants aged 82 and 86, have very much been involved in actually procuring the technology that we are using within the hub. So they've been very much involved in choosing it, talking to the suppliers, and it's just an amazing thing to watch, actually. Some of the technology, I think what the demonstrator site shows for the tenants when they come and visit is that it's not intrusive. It's really doesn't look like technology. It enables them to see that technology can be very discreet. There's the Internet of Things type of end user products, such as sensors that close the curtains, Alexa. We've got sensors on the kettle, fridge door, sensors in the bathrooms so that it can detect movement to make sure if someone falls, we can tell that they've fallen. Sensors and temperature controls so that the shower lights up when the temperature is reached, so someone's not likely to burn themselves or get a shock if they went into a cold shower. There's all manner of technology that we have procured and worked with the tenants and the suppliers so that our tenants and our workforce can actually learn a little bit more about how technology can help keep someone living independently.
Gary, also welcome to the podcast. Can you give us an idea of how involved the tenants were through the testing phase of these different devices and give more examples of the exact types of devices that are in the homes, the different settings that they are used and what kind of problems that they are looking to solve?
Hello, thanks for having me. So down at our tech hub, our tenants have been involved in the full journey right from the start. We met having a couple of coffee mornings where we had engagement of over 25 tenants from the development come down, have a conversation. And that was a scoping conversation just around what it was we were looking to achieve with TAPI and the digital hub. But actually, we needed their support. We wanted to tie into their knowledge and what they would like to see in terms of technologies that support them live independently in their own homes for as long as possible. And that's quite a big question because you only know what you know. And that's one of the famous quotes from the tenants down at the site. So they came on a journey with us. We had our TAPI champions and they came along to procurement meetings and to hold conversations with potential technology solution providers, which was fantastic because they got to ask questions that maybe I couldn't. And they got to ask the questions and put designs back to the producers to say, well, here's what I'm looking for. And actually, that doesn't do that. Or why does that piece of technology do this instead of that? And it was really engaging from the tenant point of view and to see and hear from the solution provider at those stages and build their understanding that technology can be non-invasive. It's not a Big Brother type setup where people are watching you or can see you. And it helped deliver that understanding. And what that enabled actually was fantastic conversations throughout the development because the tenant champions who came to those meetings came back to the coffee morning and discussed that involvement, discussed what's being looked at and what the options are. And then collectively as a group, there was a larger conversation to say, well, actually, that sounds really good. That's going to allow us to live in our own homes with predictive and analytical technologies, which will signal if something's not quite right. And that gives me the reassurance piece. That gives my family the reassurance piece that everything's okay, that I'm doing my normal routines, and that's enabling me to live in my own home for longer. So once we had those larger meetings and we agreed on the technologies, we simply went back to the solution providers with the tenants as well and said, here's what we like, here's what we want to do. And the tenants helped put a bid together or a small paper together for myself, came back to the programme board, which governs TAPI, to present, well, here's what we'd like to see down at our digital hub. Here's what that would look like, and here's the impact for the potential outcomes. And then we took it from there.
Thanks, Gary. And yes, what kind of technologies are the result of this extensive consultation from the tenants? What's in the home at the moment?
So at the home just now, we've got a vast range of different technologies. We've got a mix of consumer technologies that we can go online and purchase today. Some technologies that we may have in our own homes, such as Amazon Alexa devices, Alexa curtain openers, Hive lighting for the smart lighting. We've also got robotic dementia companion dogs to help combat loneliness. And then we move to the technology-enabled care piece. We've got different technologies, including Anthropos. Now, Anthropos use an array of sensor technology for predictive and analytical information to help give you informed insights on a daily basis to someone's change of routine. And those sensors are anything from your wall-mounted sensors to door sensors, sensors for your kettle, your fridge, microwave. So you can actually build up a picture of when someone's opening the fridge, boiling their kettle, having something to eat, and what rooms they're walking between. With that, we're using a device called VIR, which is a non-wearable falls detection system, and that's actually linked directly into the Anthropos system also. That can detect when someone's had a fall, be that a controlled fall, if it's a slip from a chair, or a fall from standing. And that can signal alert through to an alarm receiving centre to allow a prompt way response. One of the key benefits we found through there is that can take away the need for a wearable device, such as a pendant, or a wrist strap, or around your neck. Also works in the bathroom setting, with steam, etc. So there's been great potential looking into there. One of the other organisations we're working with are called Aquarate, and they use smart mug sensor technology, and that allows us to track the hydrations of our tenants. So how much fluid's been poured into a cup and what time that's been drank, and how much has been drunk, or if indeed there's been a spill. And then that in turn can feed back to our care team and give a full holistic view of someone's day-to-day routine around their movements. What time they're eating, what time they're drinking, how much they're drinking, and what that falls index is, or if there has been indeed a fall to alert the team.
Technology-enabled care has moved on so quickly, and what you're describing is actually quite exciting compared to the way that things were 4 or 5 years ago. However, there was a, maybe still is, a divide at the front door, so that you're all sensored up as long as you stay within your house, but then if you wander outside the home, is there anything happening which would enable you to be safe down the street at the newsagents or even on a bus to a beach or something like that? You know, what happens outside the home?
Absolutely. It's a fantastic question. We do have one device at the moment, which is a wearable alarm unit, if you like. It looks like a pendant, but built into this pendant has the GPS tracking facility, but it also uses a SIM card for connectivity. So should a person activate that when they are out the home, that could go through to an alarm receiving centre. Allows you to talk two-way through the pendant, enabling the call handler and the tenant being able to have a conversation. And should there not be any speech from the customer, or they're saying they're in distress for whatever reason, the information on the alarm receiving centre with the GPS can give us exact coordinates and allow us to take the appropriate action to ensure their safety.
So the hub had its official launch in May. It was opened much earlier than that, and part of the thing is it becomes an exemplar for the use of these technologies in the home. You're allowing stakeholders to come in and try it out, local health and social care partnerships, other housing associations. What feedback has been provided on the day of the launch and since? And did the trials consist of them coming in using the technology in situ in that setting, or can they take it away and you know, trial it over a longer period?
Well, I can answer that question in a number of ways. I would say that for the tenants, they have really enthusiastically engaged with us in this development around adopting and learning more about technology, and you know, so that's a really positive thing. And if you talk to the TAPI champions, they would say that they want to open up technology so that other people can use it and not be frightened to use it. Because I think one of the barriers that older people find tell us about is they are actually very nervous and fearful about using technology. So I think by the fact that we've had quite a few tenants come in and experience what the technology does and get the opportunity to play with it and touch it and see it, they're feeling less concerned about the safety of it. I would say that some of the customer impact information, particularly for the more advanced technology where we've got sensors, we've got motion sensors, door sensors, kettle, microwave, fridge, for this kind of, you know, the work that we're doing for people who are receiving care, I think what the feedback that we're getting is that the sensor technology really helps people understand that they're getting the right support and that they're able to live independently in their own flat. So it's reassuring to them that they've got someone who is monitoring their, you know, what the things that they're doing so that they know that they're safe. And that's really important. We've found that's a very important factor that our tenants are looking for. Families absolutely love this technology because they have an app, so they don't have to, you know, the feedback we've had is that, you know, that families are not worrying quite so much about their older relative because they can see that their relative is moving about. They know that they've put the kettle on, they know that they've opened the fridge. You know, they're actually able to see on this app that they're following their normal routines and there's nothing unusual going on, or there's no alerts that they're out of sync with what they would normally do. And I think that has resulted in some of our tenants, they feel more comfortable living on their own, and they like the fact that their families are not worrying quite so much about them. You know, so I do think that there's been some really positive feedback from families as well as our tenants that are in the program that we're testing to give us really positive feedback that they are feeling much more reassured about the technology. In terms of our key stakeholders, we obviously are open to any stakeholders that want to come and work with us and can see what we can offer through the technology offer that we have through BR24 and our technology. And what we're finding is that, you know, we've had several health and social care partnerships come through, local authority, digital leads, and they're all having the conversations with us about, you know, how it's working, what are the costs, how is it implemented. And, you know, this is something that I think we'll do once we've completed the TAPI project and we've got the evaluation, which has been done by Cambridge University. I think we'll be in a much better position to really, you know, be at the forefront of this area and help others with the learning that we've had from TAPI on how they potentially could do this themselves, or how they can come and partner with us.
Can I ask you, so many gadgets and gadgets for different purposes, how widely is the information shared? So that, for example, if you have sensors in someone's house monitoring a range of things, can that information be made available to the local GP or to the community nurse? That kind of thing. Is it possible to share the information so that people aren't having to cope with several different technologies from several different departments in their house?
At the moment, we don't share anyone's information with anyone other than ourselves, BR24, and families if they've got the app. But that's all obviously done with consent of the tenant. You know, one of the things that we are interested in exploring as we evaluate TAPI is really that bigger question around, you know, this is where the role of a housing association such as ours and the other specialist providers, this is where we fit into the system. In terms of, you know, we've got this information on our tenants and the people that we provide those services for, because it's not just our own tenants that we provide services for. We also have, you know, local authorities procure BR24 and other housing associations. So part of the discussion has got to be in that bigger context strategically around, well, how can the information that we have about our tenants who live in their own homes, how can that best be utilised? How can that data be best shared? How can we, you know, join the dots a little bit so that, as you say, people are not having to deal with multiple different bits of technology from multiple different providers? And I think that's a conversation that we need to have at a strategic level, particularly as we look to the new National Care Service, for example, and, you know, how we perhaps need to think about redesigning what the offer is and looking differently at how housing can have a huge role to play in some of the preventative work so that strategy services don't need to do that. You know, if we were doing more of that and utilising the resources that we all have, it might be easier to have capacity to do everything that is required as our population gets older and frailer.
Then another question from me. This is really to do with the big switch off of telephones in 2025. And of course, the switch off is already happening. Some people, myself, for example, we already have digital lines which might not support traditional telecare equipment. Is BR24 up to speed with this? And do you think the sector in general is acting quickly enough to ensure that, you know, the systems just don't stop working or stop working effectively in 2025?
Well, I can certainly talk for BR24 and for Build, and, you know, we are very ready for the analog to digital switch. Everything that we're doing has to be sustainable and have interoperability. So, you know, end user interoperability with our digital platforms is something that is really important in the work that we're doing. Is everyone up to speed with analog to digital in the sector? Probably the answer to that would be no. But I think the digital office and the procurement of a national digital arc which is just, you know, which has been happening over recent months, will help many other providers of alarm receiving.
Can I just say that a digital ARC is an alarm receiving centre, isn't it? And it's an electronic thing which is provided, and every housing provider could tap into that. Have I explained that correctly?
Yes. If you have an alarm receiving centre, there will be an opportunity for people to join the nationally procured digital ARC. So if your system's about to fall over, because you haven't done the digital analog to digital conversion, then this is certainly really good timing for those organisations. We are a bit ahead of the game. We are ready for the analog to digital switchover, and without question, you know, analog failure, and obviously the infrastructure has not been supported by the suppliers as much as it used to be, because we are going to be heading to the digital switchover. You know, and I think we're very much involved in, you know, end to end security, and also making sure that even in the digital world, we mitigate any risks that are associated with digital outages, which obviously there has been several over the course of this year. So Build is really well positioned in that front. We have been working on that for a number of years. We're an exemplar, I think, in the playbook that the Digital Office produced for local authorities and housing associations. So I feel that we're in a good position. And obviously, we're working very closely with Digital Office around the National Digital ARC also. But, you know, some of the technology that's available now is so sophisticated in terms of, in years gone by, people, if they didn't have Wi-Fi, they wouldn't have been able to use any of these digital end user products. But now some of these products have actually got MiFi installed in them, so you don't actually have to have a networked building for the digital solutions to work, you know. So I think as time goes on, the supplier end, the technology suppliers, are certainly innovating quite rapidly, and it is an incredibly agile space, you know. So I'm sure I speak for many chief execs, you know, by saying that we have to think of it in a very agile way, so that we don't commit all of our money to technology that might actually be out of date in 18 months' time, you know. So we have to remain agile and really knowledgeable about what technology is coming on stream. And I think TAPI has given us the opportunity to do that.
Looking again at some wider implications of this technology, Lynn, we've talked about the positive goal is to enable people to live independently at home for longer. My question, though, is can this technology change the model of how care is delivered altogether? Could it signal a move away from the traditional care home model in the near to mid-term future?
Well, I suppose I would have to answer that question. There are multiple different levels of care, which I think, you know, is really important to highlight, and that there comes a point in time in terms of people's aging process where they are unable to do things for themselves that require them to be looked after in a care home environment. So I think where the technology comes in is further upstream, where you're trying to keep people living independently for longer. So you're assisting them to decrease the time it takes them to get to that stage where they might need a care home. And obviously there are people who are always going to need that. What I would say is that, you know, for example, proactive telecare is something that I think in the future will change the model of care at the sort of less intense phase, because, I mean, we've done several proactive telecare pilots now. You know, it's a well-established concept around the world. You know, there's other places do this. Wales are doing it quite frequently. And we've done two pilots with Tech Scotland, and the results were really very impressive, where we adopted a good conversations model, and our BR24 staff were doing proactive telecare. In the most recent episode that we did, we worked with a health and social care partnership, and it was people that were being discharged from hospital, and we offered proactive telecare as a first line for those individuals that were coming out of hospital where they needed contact every day, but they didn't necessarily need physical person, in-person contact every day. And actually, we found that the cohort who took the proactive telecare, the results were quite remarkable versus the people that didn't take the proactive telecare. So we had two cohorts really that we were able to compare the results from. And I think, you know, when I mention about the systems impact that we can have as a housing association that does housing and care, this is the sort of thing that I mean. You know, my staff in BR24 have now learned quite a lot of about proactive telecare, and it's an offer that we are really looking forward to having for our own tenants. And it's something that we're really keen that commissioners and local authorities actually start to look at procuring proactive telecare rather than just reactive services, which is the predominant model that most alarm receiving centres have in Scotland. But some of the results that we found with the proactive telecare, we saw a 72% reduction in alarm use in those individuals that we were calling every day, a 68% drop in people going to A&E, a 91% reduction in families being called out to those individuals, 75% drop in ambulance calls, and 60% reduction in a funder response. So I think it's really quite important to consider the role that proactive telecare has in the whole system and be thinking differently about potentially, you know, as a first line, you know, rather than jumping to an in-person, particularly for, you know, there's quite a lot of evidence around this that a lot of people who go into hospital or have an episode of being unwell, you know, they can become quite deconditioned, they can become quite frail in a very short period of time. But many of these people who've been living independently before that has happened to them, they need a bit of support for a short period of time to get them back on their feet. They gain confidence in their own home environment. And actually you find that, you know, they don't have a great need once they're back in the swing of things. So proactive telecare just acts as a security blanket for them. They know someone's going to be checking in on them every day. If they need assistance, they can get assistance by pressing their alarm. And we believe that, you know, this is a very positive contribution to making sure that, you know, in terms of the demand issues that we have with, you know, the demand outstrips capacity. So if we can in any way help with proactive telecare, it means that the people that really do need the physical person visit gets that, you know. But there are some people who definitely like the proactive telecare pilot who really don't, who did really well just with having the proactive telecare calls.
Lynn, in our last episode, we were talking to Hanover about care and age-appropriate housing. Hanover called for, they would like to see government targets along the lines of those in place for affordable and social housing supply. What measures would you like to see introduced?
I think we have to be having the conversations about digital adaptation and the way that we have physical adaptation and making sure that we have properly funded digital adaptation to be able to meet with Scottish Government's requirements of trying to help people live independently and age in place. And I also think that I would also like to see sort of minimum standards of what is required for supporting people to live independently from the RSL perspective, you know, that in relation to design brief and relation to digital design brief, you know, I think we should be working to incorporate these things into, you know, what is regarded and expected when we build accommodation now, because most of the accommodation and developments that we're about to embark on, you know, they're going to be standing for 30, 40 years. So they've got to be able to stand the test of time. So there's a few things there, but I think the funding model, you know, to be able to achieve this has got to be looked at from a systems perspective. And I would most definitely want to be having strategic discussions on how, as a specialist housing provider that can do all of these technology things, we can work more in partnership with health, local authority, and Scottish Government on being able to afford to do our part to keep people living independently in their own homes.
Can I play devil's advocate slightly here, Gary? All this tech is geared up for alerting people and families around the individual to when things go wrong. I understand there is, you mentioned the companion pet, which is more of a kind of a daily kind of interactive thing. But if this person is, you're going through their days and weeks fine with no need for any alerts to be triggered, could they become quite lonely?
think there was a risk for that just now without the technology. But actually, that technology can signal routines, you know, a pacing back and forth, showing patterns of when someone's disturbed in their home. But to flip that on its head, there's a family app that we have trialled as well with the technology, and we've just had some fantastic feedback from one of our tenants and their sister that we're going to look to use as a case study. Now, the sister has been really stressed, you know, about our sister being in residential housing. She's concerned that she's not going about her day as normal, and their relationship became really strained because they were phoning daily, you know, and the conversation was pretty much, have you done this, have you done that? And that's not warm. It's not a warm feeling for the tenant side of you. It puts a strain on relationships, and that can cause loneliness and isolation. That can cause this person to ignore the phone calls because they don't want stuck in this daily trap of justifying what they're doing. But with the family app, that stress is gone. They've been able to see that the person's up, the normal routine's underway, and the phone calls are now spread throughout the week. They're 2 to 3 times a week, but there's more meaning and value behind them. It's, how are you doing? How's your week been? What would you like to get up to? And it's improving relationships and actually bringing families closer together. So it's a two ways to look at it. There's always a risk, but if we can focus on the positives and showcase the positives, we can absolutely embed those.
I've been trying to work out what I think about one of the things featured in the TAPI report, which is the haptic hug. And that's where you have a vest which you have to wear, and somebody in some far off place presses a button and the vest warms up and gives you a squeeze, and so you get a hug. I've been trying to work out whether that would ever be a good idea, or whether actually it could almost be quite nice to have that.
It's borders on the ridiculous to absolutely one of the best ideas ever. And I'm with Jimmy.
Yeah.
Puzzled.
Never seen this one. I'm now going to have to look into that. We do have, and I never say this, but we do have a VR system as well. Not because we like the game down at the site, although that's primarily what they were invented for. But one of our tenants was using it and connected to her grandson, who doesn't stay locally. And she was paintballing with her grandson. No, so when you're looking at that technology piece, that's something I can't say about my granny. She's never been paintballing with me. But for her to do that with her grandson, it's improving connections in a way that was maybe never possible without the technology.
That brings us to the end of this episode. My thanks to Gary Bailey and Dr. Lynn Douglas from Beald. Thanks, as always, to Jimmy Black. I'm Kieran Finlay, and we'll be back with another episode in a couple of weeks.